We'll get ready.
As I said, the title of our sermon this morning, there's danger in a crowd. There's danger in a crowd. And we notice that as time go by, we look and see as the nation, which way the crowd is going. You have social media, Facebook, and YouTube, and all types of things that young people, I just don't know what all it is. You know, I say Instagram, Twitter, and all these different things, and seem like people are swayed by whichever way the crowd's thinking, what the crowd's desired, and what is the crowd. And there's danger in a crowd. You know, one of my favorite sermon that I've heard and that I preached on growing up, and that, you know, I used to be at the house in the dark while a lot of people going other places and doing other things. My mother had an album, Well Holiday, which when they asked me to list my favorite childhood hero, it was a preacher. It was Well Holiday, and he preached a sermon, "Come out from among the in crowd," because there's danger in a crowd. They say we live in a democracy, but not a true democracy. True democracies normally don't last. That's what happened with Rome when it came and wanted to be a democracy or whatever. But God is the one who institutes governments and authority. And what the people want or desire, whatever, it's not necessarily the right thing. It's not what's right, because man has a fallen nature, and his nature gives him the propensity to rebel against authority, not obeying authority figures in their lives. There's something about that, and that's why, like I was teaching the other night, living among a nation of rebels, and now I'm preaching on there's danger in the crowd. And our sermon text comes from Isaiah, the 30th chapter, the 1st through the 8th verse, in the book of Numbers, the 16th chapter, 1st through the 40th verse. Isaiah 31 through 8 reads, "Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Lord, that take counsel, but not of me, and that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit. That they may add sin to sin. They walk, they go down to Egypt, and have not asked at my mouth, to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt." That's trusting in Pharaoh, trusting in men, doing something contrary to what God had told them to do. I talked about Korah once before. Korah was a cousin of Moses, and the Bible is full of a family relationship, things within families or whatever. But that's where sometimes the problem with authority and structures God had set it causes the problem. I'm not going to read the whole of chapter 16. Hopefully you read it when you go home and later on as you hear this. But it's about the rebellion of Korah. "Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and on the son of Pelek, son of Reuben, took men." Now these are Moses' cousins, the sons of his brothers, Moses' brothers and things. So these are relatives that God had took from among the Levites and made and brought them close to the Lord and put them in positions in the Lord. Verse 2 says, "And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown." Notice that it's men of renown and famous in the congregation. Like I said, these were wealthy men. These were leaders. These was like your politicians, your pastors, your deacons, and the senators and representatives. These was able men. These was representative of the people. That's what we have today as a republic. It's not a democracy, because a republic has people that represents other people. In other words, they have leaders that represents what the will of the people is. Whereby as you have a democracy, it's the people rule of what every people doing different things and what a man chooses himself or whatever. It's kind of like the time of the judges where every man did what was right in his own eyes. I was telling you about the law about that moving that tree from somebody else's property. Without the law in the midst, there's chaos. You know, that could create confusion, and that person don't want to pay for his tree falling onto our fence and into our backyard, and the lady next door is upset at him because it's done tore her fence and thing up. But without a law to make people do things, when you're not under a law or ordinance, it brings chaos and confusion. But if we keep on reading there, it says, "And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, Ye take too much unto you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord." And when Moses heard it, he fell upon his face, and he spake unto Korah and unto all of the company, saying, "Even tomorrow the Lord will show you who are on his side, and who is holy, and who will cause him to come near unto him. Even him who had chosen will be caused to come near unto him. This do, take you censers, Korah, and all his company, and put fire therein, and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord doeth choose, he shall be holy. Ye take too much upon yourselves, ye sons of Levi." And Moses said unto Korah, "I hear, I pray ye, ye sons of Levi. Seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them? And he had brought thee near to him, and all the brethren, thine brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee, and seek ye the priesthood also? For which cause both thou and all thine company are gathered together against the Lord? And what is Aaron that ye murmur against him?" And Moses sent and called to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which he said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that thou hast brought us out of a land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness? Except thou thyself altogether a prince over us, who make themselves thyself altogether a prince over us? Moreover, thou hast not brought us into a land that floweth with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." And Moses was very wroth and said unto the Lord, "Respect not thou that their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, neither have I hurt one of them." And Moses said unto Korah, "Be thou and all thine company before the Lord, thou and they, Aaron, tomorrow, and take every man his censer, and put incense in them, and bring ye before the Lord every man his censer, 250 censers, thou also and Aaron, each of you in of you his censer." And they took every man his censer and put fire in them, and laid incense thereon, and stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all of the congregation against them unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto the congregation. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, "Separate yourselves from among the congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." And they fell upon their faces and said, "O God, the God of the spirits of flesh, shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation?" And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, "Speak unto the congregation, saying, Get you up from among the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan and Abiram." And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, "Depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest ye be consumed in all their sins." So they gave up from the tabernacle of Korah and Dathan and Abiram on every side. Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door of their tents and their wives and their sons and their little children. And Moses says, "Hereby ye shall know that the Lord had sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own mind. If these men die the common death of all the men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord had not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing in the earth, open her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertaineth unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord." And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground cleaved asunder, and that that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods, they and all that appertained to them, went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished among the congregation. May the Lord add a blessing unto the reading of his word and help me to divine it out to you as best I can this morning. I read about 32 verses of a 50-verse chapter there. And it's so long, you know, it needs to be divided, as I told you last week, into maybe two or three sections or four sections to properly preach on. But we see here a rebellion among the upper echelon of the people. That's what we're having today, the pastors and the leaders, the political leaders, those that lead the people instituting this rebellion against. A rebellion is not against God. I mean, a rebellion really is not against man, but it's against God. It's against the authority that God had instituted. They can't fight against God personally because God is not a man where they can see God to do these things. So they take and fight against a representative of God, those that represent God. That's like they hung Jesus Christ on a cross. He represented a spoke for the Father. That's as they tormented the apostles that spoke for God. That's who they took their wrath and they raged out of them. That's who sometimes our children, when we don't want them, they don't want to do what we tell them to do, or they rebel against us or what we're telling them or whatever. It's not actually us that they're raging and rebelling against. It's the authority and the order of God, because it is God who had said, honor their parents. Honor their father and their mother, and to do these things. So it's a matter of obeying the authority that had ruled over you, so forth, as with a governmental system, as with on the job, wherever it be. God has set up an orderly arrangement to prevent chaos, because God is not the author of confusion. When he introduced the family, the marriage, the family, whatever, Adam was the head. He made Adam the head, and then he made the woman. So as a result of her rebellion against God's authority, as a result of disobeying God, that's what rebellion is. It's the disobedience of authority. So we're going to take this all the way back to the Garden of Eden, is when Eve rebelled against God, where she didn't believe or trust in what God said. God, it says, eat not of that tree. In 1 Timothy 2 and 12 says, "But I suffer a woman, not a woman to teach, nor usurp authority over a man, but to be in silence because of this transgression against God." She was deceived. Adam openly rebelled against God. So what did he do? And that rebellion, as being the representative head of mankind, he lost the authority to rule and reign in God's government up on earth. That's how Satan won out, because God couldn't establish this through man, because man was rebellious. When he partake of the forbidden fruit, what happened? He brought the nature of Satan into him, that the knowledge of good and evil. God didn't want him to have the knowledge of good and evil. That's why he put him out of the garden, because he says, unless he live forever in this state, this condition, to know good and evil, let's put him out of the garden so he won't eat of the tree of life and live in this horrendous state, knowing both good and evil. See, that's why, you know, a parent try to chill their child and teach them as best they can in God. But that's why David says we're shaping in iniquity and in sin our mothers did conceive us. So from the all the way from the beginning, we have this nature in us. This is part of us. That's why sooner or later you end up rebelling against your parents. That's why it says leave home and be joined unto your wife or whatever, but in that leaving home along the way, so many things of iniquity has shaped your way of thinking and your way of action that God has to purge out of you, have to sanctify you, have to consecrate you unto himself, and through his word, sanctify you. In other words, he sets you apart and uses his word to put you back in a state of innocence. How many times we wish our children was back in that state of innocence where they trusted and they believed in us and had faith in what we said. Yes. It's an open rebellion, or open, outright going against us. They want to go to their own church. They want to follow their own gods and do all these things. But there's danger when we start going and following our peer groups and other people to commit these sins and to be shapen and molded in the image and the direction of this world. And that's what we see. Like I said, it's a family matter, and that began in the garden. That's how it got in us. And that's why when we tempt to do good, evil is right there, because it's part of our nature. So God calls us out. Now notice that God has to separate you, consecrate you away from the things of the world, or move away from the rebels in the midst of it. As he told the people to move them around, Dathan and Korah and Abiram, just as he tells us in Revelations 18:4, come out of Babylon. In other words, come out of the world. Come out of it, come away from it, unless you be partaker of her plagues. These people that followed Korah, and I have to come back to some of it next week if I can and preach on it or whatever. But a lot of these people, over 14,000, look toward the end of that chapter, I think it was over 14,000 that had died in that plague that followed after this rebellion, let alone those of Korah who had died following Korah in this rebellion. But let me continue on here, because I didn't change that page that I was on, and I'll preach on that next week. But in Corinthians, it says, come out from among them and be ye separate, for I'll be a father unto you. You'll be my sons and daughters. Because God's people, even though he brought all of them out of Egypt, he couldn't take Egypt out of them. God brings us out of sin, but sin still is in us. He brought the people out of Egypt, which is a picture and a type of sin, and he told them not to go back that way. But we see in the book of Isaiah where they're going back into Egypt. They're being led back into sin, back into the things of the world. People within the church, in churches, listening at other people in the churches, crowds of people, it'd be other ministers and things rise up and speak great swelling words. These are popular people, of people within the church that has great wealth and authority. God had placed them in positions of ministers, deacons, and everything, but they'll rise up and could speak well or whatever and draw part of the church off after them, after that, following them or whatever, and split the church, rebelling against that pastor, that leadership that God had put in authority there, whatever. Now, sedition. Let me define a word here, sedition. Sedition is an incitement of resistance to insurrection against lawful authority. That's what sedition is. That's why I say unless this sedition is punished by man, this resistance of January 6th, this insurrection, that the President of the United States led sedition. In other words, it's incitement of resistance to the vote of the Electoral College, the acclamation of those votes to accredit it and establishing a new president. He wanted to continue on the rule, so he incited a resistance or insurrection against the authority of the government of the United States of America. This is a sedition. The Bible tells us that we shouldn't be part of seditions or whatever. That's why I took it all the way back to the point where God put it in the New Testament, that went all the way back from the Garden of Eden, because as he set up the government of the household, he says that the man shall bear rule over his wife. Right? Because you have done this thing, he told his wife, that because she had did that thing, in other words, she had rebelled against God, that she shouldn't try to take the authority from her husband, undermine that authority, or supplant that authority from her husband to seize that authority. That's the way God has an orderly arrangement in the home. That's why he tells children, part of the Ten Commandments, honor your parents. But when you go to talking to your parents any kind of way, disobeying your parents or going against the laws and authority of their household, it's a rebellion against God. That's why when David sinned with Bathsheba and killed Uriah and got her pregnant and all these things, notice in Psalm 51 he says, I've sinned against you and you only, because sin is against God. Sin is a transgression of God's laws. That's part of the world, how these consequences came about with him and Bathsheba or whatever. But the sin is against God. Now, you transgress or you do things with your fellow men that are wrong or whatever. But see, you have to get forgiveness from God. You have to go to God because, what? You've rebelled against his authority or laws that he set up. Yes. Usurp. To usurp is to seize an office, a holy office, a place, a function of power in possession by force without a right to it. Well, Satan didn't usurp the throne. He didn't usurp it. The consequences of his disobedience to God, he lost these things. Jesus Christ gained them back. How? His righteousness came by his obedience. That's why we must be covered with his righteousness, because it was his obedience to God. Adam, through disobedience, he lost this. But to get it back, Jesus Christ, he obeyed God, and he didn't supplant the devil or do any of these things. What supplant is like what Jacob did to Esau. To take the place of as if by force or supplant. What Rebekah and Jacob did was they undermined Esau. That's why his name was Jacob, which is what? Supplanter. He was an underminer. You remember he stole the birthright. He stole the blessing. He supplanted. He got these things. That's why we can't work God or whatever. And God brings us to a place when he births us again, we must be born again. We start working the righteousness of God. So if we was to take, that's why, as I was a teacher here at this church years ago, and as the pastor was getting older and he put me as assistant pastor or whatever, he put me as assistant pastor, and as assistant pastor, I was doing things and he was saying different things to me. But the other assistant pastor, he wasn't an assistant, but he was one of the ministers here, but he was one of the founders of the church. Let me not get into the politics of that or whatever. But after the pastor passed, who had told me or instituted or put me in that position, he took over, that minister took over by power, by, how would, let's see, it would be sedition because of the people that were here at this time. They worked with him and they took over. So I humbled myself and I left. You know, I didn't fall out with him or the church or anything, but I left because I couldn't be a part of that sedition, of that overthrow. We had a church meeting and everything that was going on, but that installation of me being over the church, I didn't fight it the way people fight naturally or by insurrection or whatever. What happened was I left for a number of years, but when I came back, he turned it over to me. I've been here, 15, 20 years now. He's still out there, but he's no longer at the church. He's no longer in here or whatever, because when you usurp something or take something, you're in a place just like Satan is. He's a usurper to the throne. You remember he says, I'll be like the Most High. He was going to take it. So what God has for you, you have to be patient and wait upon God to place you or put you in that position or place God has you for. That's why people ask, when to leave a church or when should I leave a church or what? You have to be careful with that. You have to be born again. You have to be led by the Spirit of God, and you have to be walking by faith and get so close to God that he's teaching you and his Spirit is guiding and leading you, because it's different for all individuals involved. It's different from everybody involved because God is working out to instill his character, his image and likeness in you, and no two people alike. So God is a personal God. That's why I say you have to hunger and thirst and seek after God, and you'll find him, because that's why Jesus Christ came and died, to establish his church here on earth. That's why we pray, thy will be done and thy kingdom come. But the violence can't take it by force, because those will be expelled out. If I take something from you, that's why I said the woman submits herself to God. She submits herself to husband. But in doing these things, she's obeying God, and God lifts her up. That's why it says you'll be saved through childbearing. God has a way to do these things. But Korah, he brought him near. You know, Korah, they was the ones who set up the temple. They did different things and offerings. I don't want to get off on that tangent. But he was close to the Lord, but he wasn't in the priesthood. His inheritance was as one of the Levites or whatever, but he wasn't in the priesthood. But God had drew him near. Just like in the church, God places people in the church. He places deacons, apostles, teachers, and all sorts of help and things. But once we leave at a place, and that's why we have to make sure of our calling. What is it? What place is God calling you to in the church? See, so Korah approached Moses through his pride, I guess, and his wealth. He wanted esteem. He said, all of the people are holy, which was right. But God has, each person has a position in a place in life. He giving everybody a talent, a gift, and we have to find that. Where does our bone fit in? Ezekiel preached the hip bone. People love that, about the hip bone and the thigh bone and the leg bone, all these. The Baptist preachers preach that thing, and some of them could preach it so good, have you feeling so good. But do you understand what he's saying? You will have a problem. That's what happened with Jimmy Swaggart. I heard somebody preaching on that one time, that if God had made him an evangelist, but then when he start pastoring a church and offering in another section, it didn't work out so well for him. That's when he fell from grace, because God hadn't made him the pastor of church. He was made as an evangelist, and that's what his first thing was. He was going around singing it. Yeah. I used to have a lot of albums and things from, and he was the top man in the world. But he fell from grace when he started pastoring and set up the assembly and had all kinds of people following. But he fell because he tried to occupy a place that God hadn't put him in. See, that's what Lucifer, he was a singer. He was the morning star. But he started doing something God hadn't called him to do. That's why a lot of deacons, and that's where we get the Laodiceans from, I mean the Nicolaitans from. You hear the Nicolaitans in the book of Revelations. This sect of the Nicolaitans, he said, which thing I hate. Nike, it comes from the word, means victory or whatever. But let me not go too far down that trail. But Nicholas was one of the deacons that they had anointed in the book of Acts to take care of the widows and things. And the problem is God give deacons certain gifts or whatever, but you get deacons that start wielding power and authority and have they the hands and the arms of the pastor, and they'll fool around there and try to overtake that pastor. A lot of time the deacon tries to run the church, which a deacon is not that the place of a deacon is to do things in the church, but it's not the same as a position as of an elder, and there are many deacons that are elders, but it's a difference in that position, a place of authority. It's like Korah would have been one of the deacons or ministers in the church, but then he wanted to intrude in the priesthood. It's like Uzziah. You remember we read about Uzziah? Where Uzziah came in and he wanted to offer up incense in the temple, and the priest came in and says, Uzziah, it's not for you to offer up incense in the temple. It's not for you to offer up incense in the temple. And when he set forth to offer up incense, God turned him to a leper. And from that day forward, he couldn't operate as king because he was a leper, and his son ruled in his reign instead. See, that's we see the prophet, the position of prophet, leave during the time of Solomon. The last prophet we had was during the reign of Nathan. Solomon kind of eliminated that position because of his wisdom and knowledge, but Solomon fell from grace, and that's why we have a worldly wisdom that had departed from Solomon's line. That line is cursed. That's the line with Jeconiah in it. That's why I say, man, that they were cursed from the throne. That's when it went to Nathan, another one of David's sons or whatever, and Mary came through Nathan. But this rebellion, I say it, it's within the family. All of this is the family. God teaches and preaches, and God is a family. Elohim. That's why it says, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. That's why, you know, I'd be asking about my nephews and my cousins and all these people, because the family has broken up, especially with my family. They've broken up and all went their ways or whatever. But if we're to be what God has for us, or God sent us, we have to realize if we all family, that means we're all supposed to be serving the same God. We don't supposed to be dispersed as this way. We have to all get on the same page. Korah wasn't on the same page. He wanted to do something God hadn't called him to do. He wanted to occupy a position. Pride and all these other things had entered in with him. Now, the whole family didn't die with Korah. The whole family didn't die with Korah. Now, Korah's sons and daughters, some of them say, well, Dad's wrong. See, you have to find out. And that's why I tell you, it's a lot of good things that I tell my wife and everybody all the time. It's a lot of things that my mother did or said that's still with me today that helped me or whatever. But then I have to see the bad things also. The good things and the bad things with my father, I have to see them and know them and stand and say when it's wrong or whatever. That's why one of the things that happened bad in this last presidential administration was nepotism. When you put people in position because of your kindred or relationship, that's when it all falls apart. Now, within this family of Korah, they said that's the family that Samuel came out of. One of the greatest prophets it ever was through Korah, this generation with the brothers of Moses, and is which Samuel came out of. Well, look at Numbers 27 and 3. They come and plead, and these are the sons of the children of Korah. And it says, our father died in the wilderness, but he was not among Korah's followers who had banded together against the Lord, but he died of his own son, of his own self, and left no sons. So you need to go to Numbers 27 and look at the people. And that's why I say, you have a personal story. God has a way that you came up. Everything happened in your life happened for a reason and a purpose. So what father you have, God gave him to you. Stepfather, stepmother, whatever children you have or your family, God had placed you where he had placed you. You should be content, but you should learn why he placed you where he placed you. Stop trying to leave. That's what happened to the angels who left the position or place God had put them in, and they rebelled along with Satan. This is the 27th verse chapter is what I preached at Mr. Luther's funeral. It was, then came the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Micah, the son of Manasseh, of the families of Manasseh, of the son of Joseph. And these are the names of the daughters, Mahlah, Noah, Hogla, and Milcah, and Tirzah. And they stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest and before the princes, all the congregation by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, says, our fathers died in the wilderness, and he was not of the company of them that gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah, but he died on his own sin and had no sons. Moses makes a provision here where these women, men couldn't marry these women and come in and take their inheritance or whatever. God set a way because, you know, a lot of women have a lot of power and authority that had came down to them. And it's good that these women, that because sometimes it's for that woman to have it. They didn't usurp this authority. God placed it into their hand. Just like, you remember the woman that David married after her husband died, Nabal died, Abigail? She was a righteous or virtuous woman or whatever, and Nabal was a fool. But God removed Nabal. See, that's why marriage is just put here as example, but in the resurrection, they neither marry or give in marriage. So whether you was a good husband or a wife, that's up to God to determine. That's why I say you have to live in your position and do what God has called you to do, whether your wife be or your husband be lost or not. That don't mean that both of y'all gonna be saved just because both of y'all went to church or whatever. See, Ahab shouldn't have listened to Jezebel or whatever, because God calls each individual to himself. He calls us corporately, but each child of God is birthed separately. Just like Ananias and Sapphira, God gave them an opportunity to not lie as her husband lied. She told the same lie her husband told, and she died. Just because your husband is no good don't mean you have to be no good. You don't have to follow him in it. If your parents is doing something wrong, your parents is wrong. If your children are wrong, they're wrong. And so her father hadn't died in this rebellion, and God set up a provision for them. Listen at this. Notwithstanding, the children of Korah died not. Korah's children. Let's go back to Numbers 26 in the 11th chapter here. I'm in the 26th chapter in the 11th verse is where we find this. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah, that company that died. And you know what? I don't know if I gave you the right chapter or not when I opened up. Did I tell y'all? I told you the 16th chapter of Numbers 1 through 40, but it should be the 26th chapter of Numbers that I got this all crossed up, but it should be the 26th chapter of Numbers that this came from. But the 26th chapter of Numbers in the 11th verse says, notwithstanding the children of Korah died not. The children of Korah died not. That's telling you what happened in the 16th chapter. Go back to the 16th chapter. So when you're reading this and pastor's not there, you say, well, pastor told us they all died. Look, and it says when Korah and them came out, it says, "Don't separate yourselves from Korah, Abram, and this other guy, and Dathan." And Moses went up and Dathan and told the people to separate yourself. And it spake unto the congregation, saying, "Depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of those them theirs, lest ye be consumed in their sins." So the sons of Korah must have been of age then. That's why if you of age, and I told you at one point you're going to leave your family or whatever, you leave your father and mother or whatever, they made the decision that dad's wrong. He'd been with these other rich people, his friends or whatever, but he's made the wrong decision. He's in the church or in the wrong church, but dad's wrong right there. Get away from him, because if he die and go to hell, that's his problem. The earth rose up and swallowed him. You've heard of the sons of Korah. Where you've heard the sons of Korah from? Their dad did such a corrupt thing, and that shows you good people. That's why I say Korah was part of the church. He was part of the people. God had brought them out, but he wasn't given to scripture, or he wasn't given to understanding, or he shouldn't have been a teacher, a leader, because he would cross some things up. If you would go back and look, he said in that Moses had brought them out from a land of milk and honey. What you mean? He look at verse 10. "And he brought them near to him and all the priesthood." But verse 14 says, "But moreover, thou hast not brought us into a land that floweth with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will thou put our eyes out also?" Verse 13 contradicts what he just said, because they were headed to the promised land. It was their sins, their murmuring and complaining, their not understanding God, is why they died without entering to the promised land. Because you remember the people murmured against God and Moses when he sent the 10 spies out? Look what he says in the 13th verse. Now, this is the person that wants to lead you. This is the person that's willing to lead you, and that's what he's dying for. In verse 13, before he said that God hadn't brought them to a land of milk and honey, to show you he was a carnal man. Verse 13 says, "Is it a small thing that thou hast brought us out of the land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us?" Moses brought them out, but God had ordered Moses to bring them out. It wasn't a land flowing with milk and honey. You was in bondage in Egypt. You was a slave. God told you not to go back to Egypt. You remembering the watermelon and the leeks. You a rebel at heart. You enjoy the world. You enjoy sin. That's why I say these people that are rebelling today, they enjoy these things, and God's going to have to deal with them. This thing with the insurrection against the Capitol, God's not through dealing with that. The sin wasn't just against the nation, but the sin was against God. That affects the whole nation and the people of the nation. What he did here in Ezekiel, you remember he says, "The father shall not be put to death for the sins of the children, and the children shall not be put to death for the sins of the father." Well, the fathers need to die here. If they sin, you remember what God told them in the wilderness. Moses prayed, says, "I pray you for these people." And notice throughout this whole thing, Moses was praying for them. Don't you pray for your children when they rebel against you and do things against you? That's when you pray for them the hardest. Prayer does something. When he says, "Put fire in your censers." The censers and incense is a sign of prayer to God, talking to God, communing with God personally. That's why Jesus told us, pray for those that despitefully use us. Pray for our enemies, because they need your prayer. They need to see God. They're in really bad shape. And it's only God that can cause you to pray for other people, to really love your enemy, to truly love those that persecute you and say, "Oh man, if without that you could be vindictive, you could be evil, you could be a rebel, you could be rebellious," because resentment, bitterness, that urge to get evil is in you. Yes. It's in your flesh. Sooner or later, it's going to come back. That's why I keep telling you, it started in the Garden of Eden when they partake of the fruit of good and evil. That became part of their nature. They're rebellious. The carnal man cannot please God. God changed this that you have to have faith to hear to please God. You have to walk by faith. And whatever is not of faith is sin. That's why I say, well, I didn't tell y'all to pray for this man to pay. I don't know. God could change people's minds or whatever. But I have no faith in the prayer that this man is going to turn around and pay for his fig tree falling on our yard. Whatever is faith. Why? A lot of people go there to pray God. If it's no faith in that prayer, it's sin. That's why you actually miss. You don't even believe and trust God for this. Do you actually believe God for what you're praying for? That's why you don't receive it, because your conscience is guilty. It's conflicted. It's doubt. That's why you can't go before God with a guilty conscience. There's doubt already. You know you've transgressed God, and you have to depart from iniquity. You have to have clean hands. Korah wasn't. Here he was calling Egypt the land that flowed milk and honey, and he was in bondage in Egypt. But I digress. The sons of Korah, you might know of them because they wrote some of the sweetest psalms that you've ever heard. Look at Psalms 44 through 49, Psalm 42, Psalm 84, Psalm 85, Psalm 87, and Psalm 88. They wrote these psalms. They were singers in the house of God. They had positions. Because if your parents fall out, if they're there worshiping idols and all these, you remember I told you about Christmas and Easter and all these? If they're pagan, there's nothing you can do about that. Don't hate them. You pray for them or whatever. But you follow God. These people, that's the one that says, almost slipped until I went into the house of God. Read 1 Chronicles 6, chapter 31 through 38. You'll see where Samuel came through that or whatever. Now, as a teacher of the law that instructed people not to get involved and entangled in this world, coming back from Wednesday nights, how do you live in a nation among a bunch of rebels? Now, these 250 that God destroyed in the earth rose up and swallowed them. And I'm going to tell you about it next week. But he killed more than that after this. That was a part of this going on here. But Gamaliel in the book of Acts, Gamaliel, this is Paul's teacher. And that's why I say, how do we do this? Because in the New Testament, that's why he wrote the Old Testament. And we are under this covenant here. Listen what Gamaliel tell the people about the apostles. The apostles was preaching. And remember when Peter and them was preaching, and they whipped Peter and beat Peter and told him not to preach no more in Jesus' name. Listen at the advice Gamaliel gives. Now, this is the man who was a teacher to Paul. He says, Acts 5, 34 through 39, says, now, when they heard this, they were infuriated, and they intended to kill the apostles. But a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a teacher of the law of Moses, highly esteemed by all the people, stood up in the council of the Sanhedrin, and that's the high court. It's like the Supreme Court of their time, and ordered that the men be taken outside for a little while. And then he said to the council, after everybody took, he spoke to the elders of that council. He says, look, men of Israel, be careful in regard to what you propose to do to these men. For some time ago, Thaddeus rose up claiming to be of somebody of importance, and a group of about 400 men allied themselves with him, but he was killed, and all who followed him were scattered and came to nothing. After this man, Judas the Galilean rose up and led an uprising during the time of the census and drew people after him. He was also killed, and all of his followers were scattered. So in this present case, dealing with the apostles and thing, I say to you, stay away from these men and let them alone. For if this plan of action is of men, in other words, if they started this, if this is a rebellion, it will fail and be destroyed. But if it is of God, it appears it is of God, you will not be able to stop them, or else you may even find yourself fighting against God. Now, that's what I'm telling you today about this insurrection and about teaching. We have to see that if this thing that happened on January 6th, this thing that's going on in the nation, if this is of God, it's going to succeed. But if it started with the Tea Party and the Tea Party is rebelling against the Republican Party, now it's destroying the whole GOP or whatever, it might not be of God, but you have to be walking in God in faith, God giving you a discernment of which side to be on, because for you to be on the wrong side of this is to be entangled in the world and not have came out of the world, and you'll be one of the ones that die with the conspirators, because you'll be part of that conspiracy. That's why it says come out of the world. That's why I say world news is important. What's going on in Afghanistan, Israel, anywhere in the world, everything is important, and that's why God had set the church there. We don't operate in a vacuum, but we first have to operate in the home, in the church, in our communities, for God to start opening up our eyes for us to see greater light. But it's not going to happen with you on YouTube and Twitter and all these places, here a little and there a little, and you not following God and not born again. So how to do we do these things? Because it was discontentment that Korah had with the place where God had placed him. He had grown discontent. Let us not grow discontent. And we see our spirit being sapped sometimes. That it's a spirit of weariness and not an attentive, a zealous spirit. He speaks of Korah in the book of Jude. Jude, the 11th verse of Jude says, woe to them, for they have gone the defiant way of Cain, and for profit they have run headlong into the error of Balaam and perished in the rebellion of the mutinous Korah. Yet these false teachers carelessly go on living their evil, immoral lives, degrading their bodies and laughing at those in authority over them, even scoffing at the glorious one. Yet Michael, one of the mightiest of the angels, when he was arguing with Satan about Moses' body, did not dare to accuse even Satan or jeer at him, but simply said, the Lord rebuke you. But these men mock and curse anything that they do not understand, and like animals, they do whatever they feel like, thereby they're cursed with a curse, ruining their souls. Woe unto them, for they followed the example of Cain, who killed his brother Abel, and like Balaam, they will do anything for money, and like Korah, they have disobeyed God and will die under this curse. When these men join you at church, at communion, or in wherever they may be, they are evil smear among you, laughing and carrying on, drinking, eating, and stuffing themselves and carrying on naturally without a thought of others. They are like clouds blowing over dry land without giving rain, promising much but producing nothing. They are like fruit trees without any fruit at picking time. They are not only dead, but doubly dead, for they have been pulled out, roots and all, to be burned. All they leave behind them is shame and disgrace, like the dirty foam left by the beach, by the wild waves, that the wild waves leave on the beach. They wander around looking as bright stars, but ahead of them is the everlasting gloom and darkness that God had prepared for them. God's going to destroy them. It's like Cain was a fugitive in the earth, wandering around and scared that men was going to destroy or kill them. But if you've noticed, God has brought a lot of these politicians, a lot of the church people, to open shame. As this pandemic continues on and it's killing so many people and it's going on, what's happening to those pastors that spoke against the vaccine, that spoke against the government and following the government? Notice their parishioners are dying. A lot of them have taken the vaccine, but they're still preaching against the vaccine. But this thing isn't going anywhere. In September 20th, I think the government's going to make a booster shot ready for, available for everybody else. But they say this probably is here to stay. It's just like the flu. It's going to be from year to year. It's not going anywhere because God is not through destroying yet. That's why I say, because as wicked, as divided as we saw this nation in January, he's not through yet. The church, with his murmuring and complaining, he's not through yet. Since rebellion is an action of the flesh, let me conclude with this for the day. Like I said, we're going to have to visit this further about this rebellion. It wasn't just the earth open up and swallow. This was something unnatural that happened. So the people faulted Moses for doing it. But you can see that this was of, at least God's people can see that this was of God. But do you know they still murmured against Moses and God destroyed more of them? Those of us that can't see that this pandemic, you better watch what you say, as Gamaliel said, that you might find yourself on the wrong side of this thing. You might find yourself fighting against God. God may be working a new thing to destroy the nation, to destroy the rebellious people among the nation. Putting, I said, rebellion is a sin of the flesh and against the spirit. It says the flesh lusted against the spirit, and we know that carnal man cannot inherit the kingdom of God. We must be consistently circumspect, putting self to death through God's word, which consecrates and sanctifies us. It separates us away from the influence of other people, other things, and things in the world, and what they're saying, whether it be our neighbors or whoever. God's word has a effect of resisting or moving that away from you that's not right and strengthening you. You'll notice that a lot of the people that are rebellious are unthankful people. They're ungrateful people. They're very covetous. That's why an instruction to ministers, 1 Timothy 6:1 through 10, and like I said, I don't have to close with the rest of this some other time. I'm closing with this about these false teachers, because that's who he destroyed in this, the ones in the leadership. Just like right now, we had a veto session, a history-making veto session in Louisiana. This is the first time that they had one of those. But it didn't go anywhere. They didn't override any of the governor's vetoes. And I tell you, thank God that we have John Bel Edwards as governor, because if that Eddie Rasponi would have been in there, it would have been in worse shape than it is now. This man has a modicum of sense, but not this other guy didn't. But they had this veto session that didn't accomplish anything. We see where the senators and representatives are nothing but fussing and fighting. D.C. can't get anything done. It's all, if you notice, it's built on the premise of not governing, but on every man coming up with a new idea, a way to tear somebody else down, and not working together. They're not accomplishing these things. In other words, the focus is off of God, every man for himself. So look, what was the instructions to the ministers? And it says 1 Timothy 6:1-10. So I'm giving this, when I say ministers, all of us need to partake of what he's, because that's what the epistles, that the letters was written to the church. Listen at this, because there are false preachers and things out there. He says, all who are under the yoke as bond servants are slaves. We can put employees in there. We can put the word, if you're on a job or whatever, because a lot of people are not working on the job or listening on the job or whatever. They want more money or whatever. They're going against the employer. The employer has to mandate vaccines and mandate different things now, because you're jeopardizing other people's lives and other things. But do you see the division in the school board where they interrupted these things, in the schools where they want the children to go to school without masks, and They said, well, hold on. Now, the vaccine has changed. It is more. Now, it's not killing just old people. It's killing more younger people and more children and things. It says, but he tells us to be in subjection, he says, or to regard their own masters as worthy of honor and respect, so that the name of God and the teaching about him will not be evil spoken of. In other words, if you're out on your job causing rebellion and preaching, that's why, you know, you get fired for preaching on your job and teaching. You causing a rebellion, or you causing sedition on that man's job. You came out there to work. That's why Jesus said, work unto your employer as you would work unto God. You're supposed to be a model employee. Those who have believing masters are not to be disrespectful toward them because they are brothers in Christ, but they should serve them even better, because those who benefit from their kindness service are believers and beloved. Teach and urge these duties and principles. But what are the politicians and the preachers think? Oh, you got to stand up to them. You got to do this. Not let that devil work on. Hold on, now you're preaching a division here. That's not the way to operate in a nation of rebels. What's going to happen when you're out of work? Is that preacher going to feed you? You, and if you're able to work, you're wrong for being able to work and not working. If anyone teaches a different doctrine and does not agree with sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and with the doctrine teaching which is in agreement with godliness, which is personal integrity, upright behavior, he is conceited and woefully ignorant, not knowing anything. In other words, if you can't line up with this doctrine, that's what I told you, doctrine is the key, the instruction in teaching. See, that's what he got Eve to go against, the teachings of what God had said. Instruction, sound doctrine. We have to speak that. We have to learn. But now you got to come back. You didn't got all these people. The doctrine was messed up. Your instruction. That's why it says, let not many be teachers. He didn't put Korah to be a leader. And Korah was saying contradictory things or whatever. And he got a lot of people killed because he was going against what the word of God actually said and against a man God had instructed in placing that position. Sure, it's a lot of women that can teach or preach men on the table, but God hadn't put them in that position. It's a many of people that can get up and have great, great oratory skills and very charismatic or whatever, but had God placed you in that position or not? Had God put you there? That's why we have to be content as such that God has given us or placed us. He says he has a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, which produce envy, quarrels, verbal abuse, evil suspicions, and a perpetual friction between men who are corrupted in mind and deprived of the truth, who think that godliness is a source of profit, a lucrative money-making business. Withdraw from them. And that's what the people think the churches are, that we should, money cometh, we should get rich quick. All of us should be driving Rolls Royces and all Bentleys and all. It's not about the dollar. It's about the character. He's shaping the individual. You don't have to have a jet, a mansion, and all these other things. If you could be just content, as Solomon said, it would be just content to enjoy just a meal, a peaceable meal, than a bunch of riotous and felonious living. And the Bible talks about this in the last days, about living in this. It says it should be as the days of Noah. People were eating and drinking and cavorting around, carousing and everything. But we shouldn't be of that way. Oh, we will be part of the rebellious people. That's why he called them Sodom and Gomorrah in the book of Ezekiel, and they died, and he was against them because of unsatiable lust. They were eating and drinking of their cravings, and the way they were living, God was looking at. But see, if you're not spiritual, you're not understanding that you're living in rebellion. You're living in a nation full of rebellion that God has to punish. That's why he's calling his people spiritually out, to get an understanding to get an understanding of his word, to get an understanding of his way. Because if God had sent us, we should be hungering and thirsting after those things and walking toward them. And I'll add the rest of this to next week's thing. We've went enough on this. But we have to take heed to on ourselves with fear and trembling, work our own salvation. Heavenly Father, as I come before you this day, Lord,